I'm Lawrence Mayhew. I was directly involved in developing the analytical method that Russell did a pretty good job of explaining, so I'm going to try to avoid a bunch of overlap then. The reason why I put that spectra up there is because humic substances are a continuum of materials. There's no specific point where you have humic acids. There's no specific point where you have fulvic acids. And then the material on the left is called human, which is insoluble in either alkali or acid. I've got to give you a little history first. The term humic acid has been around for a while. This thing's changing because I touched it, or what? Okay, let's try it. I'll leave it alone. Okay, I won't touch it. The term humic acid was in use around the 1830s by scientists that were extracting his materials primarily out of peat and bogs and that sort of thing. And they were just recognizing the fact that when they got done extracting this dark material, they could treat it with acid. And then the material that they called precipitated out of solution was actually the term they used to describe humic acids. Now, from what you've seen so far and what I've just told you just now, they're obviously operationally defined. They don't tell you anything chemically about the materials, but how they are made. So that puts us in a really peculiar situation when it comes to trying to develop a analytical technique. So obviously we're dealing with some extremely complex materials, and our procedures are going to actually introduce a lot of variation also. So these were challenges that we dealt with right from the beginning on trying to develop a quantitative analysis. The term fulvic acids has been around a short time. Waksman credits this to Odin at about 1914, and the fulvic acids were defined as both alkali and acid-soluble materials extracted from what they perceived to be humified materials. Now, humic substances are actually the recalcitrant carbon that's left behind after humification. It is the darkness of dark soils, essentially. And these materials are responsible for improving or actually maintaining and balancing fertility, environmental things. It's just an endless array of things that they can do. This is probably one reason why I left the area wide open for snake oil salesmen, because it turns out they were correct. Commercial humic products are actually used primarily because they increase the efficiency of fertilizers. And this theme fits in perfectly with this symposium because we are looking at scarcity of materials in the future, and these materials allow for more efficient use of fertilizers. So they fit perfectly into environmental goals. The commerce, however, of these materials was restricted because regulators, when we approached regulators, they said, you do not have a validated method of analysis, therefore we cannot regulate it. If we can't regulate it, you can't put it on your label, you cannot make any claims. So that's kind of how this industry got started. This industry was seeing a tremendous growth in the sales of their products in 2008 when fertilizer prices spiked quite high, and that business never went away. That business has grown since, but they were illegal to sell, essentially. So this was quite a challenge. In 2008, the IHSS put together an industry group, a committee, and we met, the industry and IHSS folks met up in Minneapolis. And what came out of that meeting with the International Humic Substances Society were certain protocols. Dan actually wrote up the protocols. He's been involved in this right from the beginning. And these protocols essentially reflected the IHSS method. The reason why I put that in parentheses is because that's kind of a colloquialism. You know, there really is no true IHSS method. It just happens to be a method out there that the IHS does use consistently when they develop their reference materials for humic and fulvic acids. So therefore, they are very confident that they have materials that are of relatively high purity. There's no such thing as a pure humic acid or a pure fulvic acid by chemical definition, but higher purity would be a more proper term to address those. They were basing this method on a published publication by the Soil Science Society of America, SWIFT, 1996. And in 2010, after we sent out letters to various manufacturers, they met at the AMCOL headquarters, and there were a total of 9 companies present. Now we have 39 companies in the organization. So from this small group, you might recognize the guy on the extreme right. From this small group, we actually grew to what we are today. And the marching orders that this group gave me was, you go out and you do what you got to do to get a validated method for determination of these materials. Now, the reason why we focus on humic and fulvic acid is because we believe that these are the active ingredients in humic substances. These are the ingredients that we can isolate, and these are the ingredients that we make claims are actually working in a product. So that's why we stick with that. This method had to work, the marching orders were this method has to work on humate ores, it has to work on both solid and liquid products, commercial products, and the protocols need to distinguish a intentional or unintentional adulterant. So just to kind of run through the highlights of what this method is compared to those classical methods I showed you back from the 1830s and early 1900s, is that the first step, which is the alkali extraction, is actually done in the absence of air. If you extract these materials in alkali, in air, in the presence of oxygen, there's further oxidation that occurs, and that gives you a false reading at the end. You're including oxides of these materials as being part of the active materials, so we eliminated that. This is, of course, based, again, on the IHSS method. The alkaline extracts are specifically set to a pH of 1 in order that we can have a standard. Because there was no standard. The old definition said acidify. That was it. So a lab could go, well, I'm going to acidify to 2 or 3 or 1. There was no consistency there at all. So first step, let's set up consistency and which pH we are going to treat this alkali extract. The alkali acid soluble materials are no longer called fulvic acids. The classical definition of fulvic acids is what's left over after you alkali and acid extract. Well, there's a lot of materials that fit that definition. So we renamed that portion of this procedure the fulvic fraction, meaning that within that extracted material, there may be some fulvic acids. So therefore, we need to treat that fulvic fraction further, and the further treatment is actually done using a DAX resin. And if there's a lot of silica, iron, magnesium, calcium, or any of these other things that are naturally associated with these natural materials, that would be reported in these old methods as being included as the humic acids, fulvic acids. In this method, we separate those out and we declare our results on what we call an ash-free basis. So the materials are ashed as part of one of the analytical steps, and after that ashing, we simply adjust for the amount of ash that we detected, and then we write down what we think the true number is for that material. So in brief, if you start out with a solid material, anything that will not dissolve at all in the first step is called human. I'm not going to spend any time on human. Human's just defined operationally as everything that just will not dissolve. And after acidifying to a pH of 1, the material that flocculates out of solution, not precipitates, actually falls out of solution down to the bottom of whatever you're working with, is referred to as the humic acids at this point. And the material that produces the fulvic fraction is everything that passed through this so far. However, the fulvic fraction is further treated with an XAD8 resin. It's washed, it's back-eluted with sodium hydroxide, and then we do what's called a protonation at this point to try to reduce the amount of salts that are in that. Obviously, you're going to have a lot of sodium in there. I mean, that's for sure. That's just a given. And the acidification is done with hydrochloric acid, so you're going to have sodium chloride in there along with it. So we run it through an exchange resin to protonate it. And further steps, I'll just briefly mention them. We rotovap, we dry, we ash. So these are sort of this is a broad view of what these steps are. The method is actually used, these DAX columns are packed with this resin, and the material on the far right, the light straw color material, would be the fulvic fraction. It's run through the resin adsorbs the hydrophobic portion of these fulvic acids, and then hopefully what comes out the other side is a relatively clear liquid, which is discarded. This is a photograph of the hydrogen exchange column. Now, this method was actually subjected to what's called a single laboratory validation. Various things were tested. Precision, if we fortify a blank material, how much of that can we recover? Recovery was excellent. the minimum detection limits, method quantification limits, and the distinction of adulterants versus non-adulterants, the initial step. All these things were tested as precision, accuracy, and ruggedness, and then we had to present that results, those results, to APFCO, the Association of American Plant Food Control Officials, which are the people who regulate fertilizers in the United States of America. And, excuse me, that analytical procedure was actually approved by APFCO in the year 2015. So this is a recent development. So obviously we got to get this information out there somehow. The next step in trying to examine this procedure even more thoroughly is going to be, has been done over the last 2 years with ISO. And right now there is the CD portion of that term up there stands for committee draft. So the ISO drafted a procedure based upon what I just showed you. There are some modifications in procedure, but not in principle. And that is before ISO right now. And what we did was we put together what's called an interlaboratory study. 10 laboratories volunteered from 5 countries to engage in this study. And the study goal was precision, not accuracy, but precision, repeatability. Can we send this out to various labs, and will those various labs give us a consistent number back? That is the definition of precision or repeatability. 4 materials were sent out to 5 different countries. 13 labs signed up. 11 reported the data back to me. And then there was a wide range of humic acids and hydrophobic fulvic acids in these materials. So it ranged not only from low to high, but medium and that sort of thing. So we wanted to have a broad range tested. 4 replicated analyses were run on each material by each lab and then reported back. And one of the materials that were involved in this procedure is a material that the Humic Products Trade Association has developed, and that is a quality control material, a material that a lab can order from us, and then we can compare their results against the results of this ISO study. The ISO study data was analyzed, ran through statistical analysis, and this is going to be presented next week at ISO in China. At their semi-annual meeting. This is kind of a typical result. I threw this one out here. This is the quality control material that was developed by HPTA, and I'm not going to go into, you know, how we, all the statistical analysis theory here and everything else, but bottom line is we got some solid data. We have robust data, so that's very, very encouraging. So when I go there, I won't be embarrassed, I hope. So this is... I want to throw this one up there because this is the result of the interlaboratory study on the hydrophobic fulvic acids. You can see we got a coefficient of variation down there on the right of 29.5%. That might be pretty shocking to someone who's in the fertilizer industry, but for materials that are extremely complex, highly variable, and a procedure that introduces air at every step, I mean, there's huge opportunities for air as you go through this procedure. My goal was 30%, and I barely squeaked it in, actually. So I was satisfied with that. So this is so much better than the original data. We ran this in 2 phases. Phase 1 was a familiarization so the labs could run the procedure, see if they could get familiar with the technique. Phase 2 was actually this data right here. And phase 1 was all over the place. So it's obviously there's a learning curve when it comes to performing this. This is as much art as it is science. This is old school wet chemistry. And that's not being performed by everybody and anybody anymore. So it's been quite a challenge to get this. I'm very happy with the data. I just won't dwell on that. I think that kind of runs through what the procedure is. So if anybody has any questions, they'd be more than happy to answer them right now. Oh, boy. What does that mean? Oh, yes.
So the new method starts out by taking the solid and then basically leaching it down to a liquid that you further analyze?
Yeah, these are actually extraction steps.
So what happens if you obtain a sample from a client and it's already in a liquid form?
shake it up and run it through. There's various steps for solid procedures, and then we note in the procedure at this, from this point on, if you're using a liquid, this is where you start. And you homogenize them just by shaking it up for about 1 minute and then proceed with the rest of it. Everybody hear the question? Yeah, there is a shortage of DAX8 resin out there, and I don't know if the industry is going to respond to that or not. And then the question was, do you have any comparison using other adsorbent resins? No, I'm sorry, we do not. We are real happy with the fact that we were able to get to this point. Yes, Bruce. Yeah, one of the things that the industry is grappling with right now, and it was mentioned earlier, is that you may have thought you had a very large portion of fulvic acids in your products, and then the membership was asked to send samples in confidence, and we ran them through this analysis, and then in confidence the results were handed back to the industry, and some of them were a little bit surprised. Not too many on the positive side, most of them on the negative side. They came back with fractions of this material or maybe percentages that were very disappointing to them. And then the problem is historically they've been ill-defined. You know, now we have changed the definition of what these materials are. So obviously these products work. I mean, we have some very solid field data that says if you use this thing that we used to call fulvic acids, you get a result. And there are current products that are low in hydrophobic fulvic acids, yet they are very effective products. So obviously there's something in there that works. They are bioactive. We just don't know what they are at this point, and I think it would behoove our organization to try to discover what they are. And this discussion has come up previously. And there, like you said, there is a hydrophilic portion that is more than likely in these materials. It could be a hydrophilic fulvic acid. It could be a neutral fulvic acid. Lane here defines a broad class of these fulvic acids over a broad range of pH, so we know that it's possible that they're there. His research and others have indicated that it's a minor portion, but you know, this is the major portion of dissolved organic matter in natural systems.
One more question in the back there.
Yeah. Yes.
The definition of the fulvic acid and fulvic acid are more or less based on the solubility, extraction, etc. How about the molecular structure of fulvic acid and fulvic acid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every time a scientist publishes what they think is the molecular structure of a humic material, they are pretty busy after that, defending, you know, why they think that is the structure. It's still a very open subject, what the structure of these materials are. I wouldn't call it a total unknown, but it is still a bit of a mystery.
We don't know.
No, we don't know. Bottom line, that's where we are. There's a lot of information out there on what they think the structure may be.
Quick question.
Yeah, has anyone tried any amino-acid?
Would that be what you do, Damon?
That's what I've been making it
for. Yeah, you might want to talk to that fellow right there.
Yeah, I've been making it for it.
Are you done?
Okay, well, we'll have an afternoon meeting as well. We can continue our dialogue then. Round of applause.
Thank you.